This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 25th, 2011. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. economy grew more quickly than previously estimated in the fourth quarter. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. And in the final installment of his four-part series on corn, Todd Gleason looks at how knowledge of the history of corn can help current corn breeders. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
I'm Tom Rogers with a look at what happened on the exchanges today in Chicago and in Kansas City. It looks like a corn took a hit today in profit-taking. Soybeans traded firm, and the wheat, depends on where you were. The Chicago exchange finished lower, Kansas City higher. The winter wheat contract for May in Kansas City settled at $8.55, up a penny and three quarters. And the May wheat contract in Chicago is down 6 1/4 cents at $7.33 1/4. Deferred contract for July at $7.68 3/4, down 6 cents in the wheat. May corn finished at $6.89 1/2 for the day, and the wheat down 13 cents from Thursday's settlement. July finished down 12 1/2 at $6.95 1/2. September settled at $6.44 3/4, down 13 3/4. Soybeans for May finished up 3 3/4 cents at $13.58 1/4. July settlement 13.68 1/2, up 4. August beans settled at 13.67, up 4 1/2. And in the products, May soybean meal finished down 260 at 357.20. The bean oil contract for May settled at 56.84, up 72. Live cattle ended at 118.60, up 277.5. Lean hogs 92.47.5 at the close, down 215.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Taking a look at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says weekend precipitation will concentrate on areas from South Dakota and Nebraska through Missouri and parts of Iowa to southern Illinois, western Kentucky, and a part of southwestern Indiana. Moisture totals of 0.2 to 0.6 inches will be common, with local amounts greater. Temperatures will be cooler than usual across most of the Midwest during the coming week. Frost and freeze conditions will occur in the central plains and much of the Midwest periodically over the coming week, but no permanent crop damage is likely. Midwest precipitation next week may be restricted for a while, but a more active weather pattern is predicted by the first week of April, producing rain and snow and possibly perpetuating the cooler than usual temperature bias. Delta and southeastern U.S. planting will be slowed as precipitation increases gradually over the next 2 weeks, but recently planted crops will emerge quickly. But the southwestern U.S. plains will not see enough precipitation early next week to change soil or crop conditions.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Rogers, along with Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market on this last day of the week is Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hello there, Tom.
Well, we saw the corn market settling lower, even though we got news this morning that the U.S. sold about 1.25 million metric tons of corn. If the exports aren't putting the corn up, what's the market trying to tell us?
Very disappointing. I think that's where the trade for the weekly close, Tom, given the supportive fundamentals of those exports and also the continued supportive fundamentals of the weather and wondering whether we're going to get a decent planting date start in the corn, very disappointing, and especially given that the bear spreading came back around. And that's what started the week off. It seemed like we were bear spreading heavily. In other words, the front end was losing to the new crop. And whenever you see that, that's typically a negative demand mindset by the trade. And we had shaken that off by Wednesday's close and seen the wheat and the corn especially come back around. But even with today's good news, it sets us up for a pretty rough ride in the beginning of the week next week. And it makes me really want to consider recommending and following through with the recommendation of wanting to roll up corn puts ahead of next week's report, even though, we, like I said, these export numbers and the weather would promote more upside in the mindset of a guy coming right off the street not knowing anything about the markets.
So the December corn future didn't hold at 618.5. It settled at 609.5. What's that going to mean for the possibility of some technical selling next week ahead of the grain stocks and prospective planting reports?
Well, I think it goes back to answer your question, what ignited the additional selling today? I think that's what I was working on throughout the middle part of the trading day. And I think what really ignited additional selling after the initial lack of follow-through to the upside was the dollar making new highs against the euro currency. And the euro currency continues to be embattled because of what's going on over in Europe and what's going on over in Portugal in particular and in Germany as well and the Libyan no-fly zone and some of the political issues that has opened up in Europe between the major economic powers over there. Those are all hitting the euro pretty hard, and the euro is getting smashed pretty good here this past week. So if that continues, Tom, if the euro continues to fight and struggle against the U.S. dollar, and then we take out the Thursday low in the December corn of that 605.5 level, I think that's where you open the door of going back and testing the 10-day moving average and the 50-day moving average, both of those coming in right around 590. So I would not put it past the market, given that scenario, to have, before we get into the report on Thursday, that they may want to go back and test that 589, 590 level and test those short-term moving averages if this indeed ends up being more technical selling at the first of the week.
As we start next week, we're going to see some of those trade estimates come in for the reports on Thursday. Your client base is telling you something. You've got a report out. So what are they telling you?
Well, they surprised me. The client base in Illinois overwhelmingly is going after more corn acres based upon the survey they sent back. The Indiana producers are right in line with what my expectations were, where there's a few tinkering with more corn acres north of I-74, a lot more bean acres south of I-74, it seems like. But the Illinois guys really surprised me, and I think the Western Ohio people are also looking at a lot more corn acres. And it's interesting because Todd had sent out an email to a lot of the analysts this afternoon from Dr. Schnitke's recent update from the Farm Doc, and he actually does a break-even soybean-to-corn price ratio analysis, and it shows exactly that. And it also shows that Iowa and southern Minnesota would also be more prone to bigger corn acres. And it just goes back to the corn-bean ratio. That ratio never really got up to levels that promoted buying bean acres. So even though the flat price of beans was high, because the fertilizer prices were probably a little bit lower when producers locked in their corn needs for fertilizer needs, we're going to see probably bigger corn acres if that survey holds true.
But there is, you know, the possibility of planting delays coming up with corn, combined with the big crop of soybeans coming up in South America. If you're a bull, soybeans haven't performed that well over the last 4 weeks. The highs have been lower. Settlements have been lower. With the news coming out that may, move either side or may move soybeans down, what could we have already seen the soybean highs for the spring, or may next week's report be sort of a game changer to the upside there?
I think if there's going to be a game changer and the report means the most to anything, it's going to be the soybeans because mm-hmm. of the points you bring up. Technically, we're in rough shape, and I think the biggest thing that I'll be looking at after the report comes out is where the July NOV bean spread sits, because we're down to only about 18 cents July futures premium to November. If we would see that spread go back to a carrying charge where November becomes premium to the July after the report numbers come out, that would not bode well for the technicians, and it wouldn't bode well for the fundamentals either. And this week's weekly export sales was once again disappointing for both the beans and also the bean oil, which was an actual negative number. So I think fundamentally it makes sense why the trade has kept a premium in beans because of these bigger corn acre mindset, you know, permeating through the trade and the uncertainty of the acreage report. What we really need for beans next week is a very good stocks report, and if we would get something that would be neutral to friendly on the stocks and the spread would snap back, then I think maybe the beans would be able to find some really good support and some short covering. And I think that would especially be the case if the wheat and the corn were able to resume their move up, then the beans could follow in sympathy as well. So beans probably have the most to lose and the most to gain from the report next week, I suspect.
Yeah, and you mean the grain? You also mentioned before the grain market is also closely looking at the crude oil prices. They've been generally on their way up. They're taking a little bit of a breather today. Could it open the possibility technically for getting up to $120 a barrel for oil? What's that going to mean for the grain markets and for the world trying to recover out of a recession?
I think the technicals are there for a 120 lead month price, Tom, between now and the end of April based upon the weekly charts. What it would mean to me is that because we're running about 96 cents a gallon higher than last year for diesel prices, and I think we're about 75 or 76 cents higher a gallon versus last year for unleaded gas at a national average, I think short-term it would help us from a standpoint of increased ethanol and biodiesel fuel needs. But from a medium-term standpoint, the more the tensions in the Middle East translate into higher prices at the pump and higher prices for the emerging markets, the more it's going to probably knock our demand down the road. So we still have a very big issue on the demand side if these crude oil prices go up to those price levels and sustain those price levels for a month or two. I think that really will shock the demand quite a bit. And that goes back to the recovery in Japan, them being the third largest demand side and importer for energy. Mm-hmm. If we continue to see the crude oil market and the energy markets move up, that's only going to slow the demand side for Japan and the recovery over there. And that's going to, you know, ripple back into United States and Chinese demand as well.
One other piece of news that came out, the quarterly hogs and pigs report. Anything of note that a grain trader needs to look at?
Yeah, you know, if we wouldn't have been up $4.15 in the April hogs for the week, Tom, I don't think it would have been too much to talk about. But because we saw bigger numbers on the all hogs and pigs report and the Dece to Feb pig crop was 101.4, that was right up there at the top end of the average or top end of the estimates. On bigger pigs per litter numbers, I think the market may want to give back some of this week's gains on those numbers until more demand news from maybe China is seen. I think that's one of the things that helped the market this week dramatically. Both cattle and hogs supported one another. Maybe with this report, the hogs may want to diverge a little bit. New record highs in April cattle, by the way.
All right. Thanks for your time, Mike.
You bet, Tom. Have a good weekend.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. It's the closing market report. Now with a look at agricultural news, here's Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, the Commerce Department today says that the U.S. economy grew more quickly than previously estimated in the fourth quarter as businesses maintained fairly solid spending and restocked shelves to meet rising demand. Gross domestic product growth was revised up to an annualized rate of 3.1%. For the whole of 2010, the economy grew 2.9%, while corporate profits grew 20.4%, the most since 2004. Data so far suggests the economy maintained this growth pace in the first quarter, but there are concerns that rising oil prices could crimp consumer spending and slow the economic recovery. The United Nations today says that more than 6 million people in North Korea urgently need food aid because of substantial falls in domestic production, food imports, and international aid. Three UN agencies say that North Korea's public distribution system would run out of food at the beginning of the lean season that runs between May and July, threatening a quarter of its 24 million people. The report put North Korea's cereal import requirement at 1,086,000 tons for the 2010-11 marketing year. By contrast, the report says the government now plans to import only 200,000 tons of cereals due to reduced export earnings and higher food and fuel prices. ConAgra Foods' fiscal third quarter net income fell 6% as the maker of Healthy Choice dealt with rising costs. ConAgra earned $214.8 million, or 50 cents per share, for the period that ended on February 27th. That's down from $229.6 million, or 51 cents a share a year earlier. Russian officials say they will consider lifting the grain export ban after the size of this year's harvest is known in late September or October. Russian officials say the nation needs 85 to 87 million tons to cover domestic needs. Russia banned grain exports until July 1st, following a devastating summer drought that cut the size of the 2010 harvest by about one-third. The International Grains Council today revised higher global wheat production for the 2010-11 crop year to 649 million metric tons. Global wheat production, which was previously estimated in February at 648 million tons, is now forecast to fall 4.3% on the year, largely due to adverse weather conditions. Global wheat production is forecast to rise to 673 million tons in 2011-12 and stay broadly balanced with demand. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Corn, as we know it today, is a relatively young crop in comparison to the age of the world. All this week, Todd Gleason has been reporting on the history of corn with retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer. Troyer spent 7 years researching and writing about his favorite crop. Today, the two explore how the new generation of corn breeders can use history to continue development of the domestic corn plant.
If you think about it, says Forrest Troyer, the corn plant has been moved northward more than half a continent. The genetic pool from which it evolved has been sliced and diced by farmers and breeders in North America for about 3,000 years. Most of the selection pressure has come in the last 200 years when the gene pool was divided 1,000 ways, and then more than 99% of those crosses were eliminated. That leaves a very small domesticated gene pool from which corn breeders can draw to improve the crop. Troyer says it is vital, then, that the geneticist and corn breeders understand how that pool was narrowed. He suggests they start by reading the works of Charles Darwin.
Darwin's advice was to study the plant, to look at it sharply, to relate what you're seeing to the information that you've learned about botany, about how a plant works, and then through that decide what it needs to do better. Adaptation is the critical thing. Adaptation is the sole driving force as far as biological evolution is concerned. It's what makes everything happen. And so it makes all the sense in the world to think in terms of how can I make this plant better adapted to get higher yielding, more reliable corns.
The second notion Troyer says corn breeders should think about is the importance of wide adaptation. He says weather is the reason hybrid corn breeders narrowed the gene pool early in the 20th century. It was easier to market and grow a corn which could adapt to widely variable weather conditions.
I think most farmers understand that maybe better than most plant breeders. And so wide adaptation is a very important trait. We can select for this by having more test locations, by looking the things that don't jump around so much at different locations and different seasons, you know, very high yielding here, very low yielding over here, and so forth. We want those ones that can take the give and take that the environment puts out.
After understanding the relationship of weather to the crop and how it was used to widely adapt the corn plant across the U.S., Troyer believes today's and tomorrow's corn plant breeders will be better able to pinpoint the genetic differences, which could result in an improvement. He also says the gene pool could be expanded by looking into the old crosses and the wild relatives of the corn plant, or by altering it with genes from another organism. To him, the science remains only the science if it is addressed cautiously. In that caution, the world could find another green revolution. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Rogers, sitting in for Dave Dickey. Normally at this time, we'd be talking with Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor. We're having a bit of a problem reaching him this afternoon. We'll see if we can get him before our window ends. In the meantime, I'll tell you a little about the cash market across the country. Cash basis levels are steady to firm today, with slow farmer sales and end users taking coverage ahead of the planting season, buoying prices. Farmers remain reluctant sellers of cash inventories with the uncertainty of this year's seedings, as well as tight projected end-of-year supplies in the face of strong global demand supporting basis bids. That's according to analysts. Solid export demand for corn underpinned farmgate prices as well, with announced corn sales of over a million metric tons lifting export basis levels. The USDA reported private exporters struck deals to sell 1.25 million tons of corn to unknown destinations, as we mentioned earlier. 1 million tons, a large amount, is for delivery in the 2010-2011 marketing year. That marketing year ends at the end of August. That means the buyer will take delivery before farmers have a chance to replenish tight supplies with corn from the next harvest. Gulf Midday barge freight basis reported by USDA today said the spread for soybean bids ranged from 50 cents to 70 cents over May futures, unchanged from Thursday, and corn bids ranged from 47 cents to 55 cents over May Board of Trade futures. That's up 2 cents from Thursday. This week, basis firmed again with barge freight dropping due to high water that impeded transportation. That's according to an analyst with Farm Futures, Bryce Knorr. He says the storyline now is that there's a surplus of barges as shippers have trouble originating shipments amid slow farmer selling and difficulty loading. Knorr said whatever the rationale, corn basis firmed 6 to 8 cents on the Illinois and mid-Mississippi rivers, with bean bids up 8 to 10 cents. The export basis, or the difference between cash prices and futures, was flat to up a nickel for wheat and unchanged for corn and soybeans at the Louisiana Gulf, according to U.S. government data. Meanwhile, bean basis levels are starting to fade as diminished export demand due to competition from South America and declining demand from soy processors both reduce the draw on nearby soy supplies. We'll be taking a closer look at the weather with Steve Hilberg in the growing areas in a few moments. The forecast calls for wet conditions due to recent rain and snow in northern and eastern areas of the Midwest to continue to delay early spring field work. Colder temperatures and increasing precipitation chances will also delay field work through southern areas during the 5 to 7 day period, possibly longer than that. In addition, high river levels will inhibit barge transportation, according to Telvent DTM. In the southern plains, there appears to be little chance for significant moisture, though, to help out the western wheat areas during the next 6 to 10 days, according to that forecast. In a couple of minutes, I'll be back with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center with a look at agricultural weather.
It's National Lobster Newburgh Day. The dish was perhaps invented by Ben Wenberg, a sea captain in the fruit trade between Cuba and New York. He first demonstrated the dish at Delmonico's restaurant in New York City, where the creation was added to the menu as Lobster a la Wenberg. Months later, after an argument with Charles Delmonico, Wenberg was banished from the restaurant. And Delmonico flipped a few letters in Wenberg's name on the menu, Lobster Newburgh was born. It's also Pecan Day. In 1775, George Washington planted pecan trees, some of which still survive at Mount Vernon. The trees were supposedly a gift to Washington from Thomas Jefferson. On this day in agricultural history in 1848, William Keith Brooks was born. An American zoologist, he was a champion for the conservation of the Chesapeake Bay oyster. In 1867, Ferdinand Runge died. He was a German chemist who developed a method for obtaining sugar from beet juice. And in 1914, Norman Ernest Borlaug was born. He was one who laid the groundwork of the so-called Green Revolution, the agricultural technological advance that promised to alleviate world hunger. And he developed a wheat-rye hybrid with higher yield and protein content. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Rogers, and joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here in Champaign-Urbana. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Well, NOAA came out this week with its spring flood risk report. It's seems a bit dire for parts of the area. What do you think of it?
Yeah, much of the upper Midwest is just primed for flooding this spring. A lot of snow occurred this year. We had and probably even more importantly, we went into the winter with a pretty wet fall in the upper Midwest. So soils were already saturated. And that, you know, of course, means that there's not much place for the water to go that is sitting on the ground. And, oh, roughly most of Minnesota right now, all except maybe the southern quarter and the northern half of Wisconsin, have upwards of 15, 18 inches of snow still on the ground. They were starting to lose some this week, and then big snowstorm moved across that area earlier this week and dropped up to 17 inches of snow in some areas. So there's a lot of water sitting on the ground. Soils are saturated, and we're in the spring. So as the weather warms up, that's all that water is going to go somewhere, and it's right now scheduled to go down the rivers.
So what could this mean for planting delays here and there?
Well, probably in our area, in Illinois, Indiana, and much of the southern Midwest, there probably won't be too much of a problem at all, except maybe in river bottom areas where there is some flooding. The upper Midwest is going to probably see some. There's not much question that's going to probably happen. With all the snow still on the ground, we're going to be cold here for the next week or so. Temperatures will be below normal. They'll be even colder up north. So that's good in some respects. It keeps the snow melt at a reasonable level, pretty low actually, which is better than a rapid warm-up. But on the other hand, it just keeps that moisture sitting there for a longer period of time. So I think the southern half of the Corn Belt probably won't be too bad. But, of course, you get up into Minnesota and the Dakotas, and you're starting to get into some real problems.
I suppose it would probably be nice to be a little bit warmer here, but, again, nothing to be too concerned about in the long term?
No. I mean, this week's warm weather was above normal, but not unusual for this time of year. March is a pretty changeable month, as we all know, and we can have these swings in temperature. Looks like we are going to stay rather cool for the next week or so, and dare I say, we'll probably even see some of the white stuff, that four-letter S word, snow.
Nothing to cause flooding problems.
No, either. Nothing to cause flooding problems, but enough to keep everybody reminding that we're not quite fully into spring yet, and it'll keep things on the cool side.
Right.
But it does look like maybe after the first week, maybe after next weekend, we may actually get into a warmer weather pattern, and
right,
we may actually keep the warm weather to stay.
Before we go, very quickly, any relief in sight for the wheat belt that's seeing some dry conditions?
Yeah, nothing extensive. It looks like the best chances for relief in the southern U.S. will be right along, maybe in the far southern plains and Gulf Coast later next week, with some frontal systems moving from through there. But the central plains and the northern half of the southern plains probably going to stay on the dry side with just maybe scattered showers.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right.
Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. That's today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter before the key end-of-month reports next week. You can do that at willag.org. You can use the link in the right navigation window. Along with Dave Dickey, I'm Tom Rogers.